Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. You know, since I'm going to talk about so many things, and there is not really much time, because 1 hour is long, but it's short if you have to talk about the old physics. So I will tolerate some question. I'm sorry. Only if it's for understanding at the beginning. Otherwise we have to... I can answer questions, but then we lose the all answers that I can give to you that you don't even imagine the questions. So maybe let's... I never said this, but this time I don't have much time. You know, I'm sure that most of you, those that you don't know me, maybe when you read the abstract, thought that I am getting crazy. And I, you know, in your place, I would certainly think that this would be a kind of, you know, omnipotence delirium. And, you know, I should say that myself, 5 months ago when I was here at Perimeter for the reconstructing the quantum state, I never imagined that I was going to change my mind completely. I was completely focused on a very different problem, which is why quantum, for many years, like, you know, 8 years more. And I never thought about relativity. I completely forgot H-bar, quantization rules, and these things. And it happens just 1 month later that I met a friend of mine who works in particle physics. And then we start discussing about, you know, what's going on in particle physics, what's new there. And this guy said, you know, I'm pretty bored about this path integral stuff. I would love to do some quantum information. I said, oh, that's interesting. Why don't we try to put the things together? And I was so impressed by his bad mood that night, I remember clearly I made a dream, one of these dreams that you remember the day after, right? And then you remember for many days. But, I met him in this dream. We had a meeting with his group, and we started discussing about, you know, why don't we think a quantum information framework for particle physics so you can have fun with quantum information? And then I say, you know, but the problem is that it's not just quantum mechanics. We have a field there. What is the field? And, but, you know, I say, what is the field? It's just quantum mechanics. There is nothing more than that. You have just a huge number of systems. So what is a huge number of systems? It's a big quantum computer. Okay, that's the idea. It's a big quantum computer, like the computational universe of Seth Lloyd. You know, it looks every idea looks stupid at the beginning, right? Because that's physics. When the friends of my wife asked me, what kind of job are you doing? You are a physicist, it's a kind of nerd. Yes, I say, that's the job. You must be professionally a nerd. Means that when an apple falls on your head, you must take it seriously. So you have to do your experiments, theorize why, how, and when. And then you discover classical physics and gravitation. And bam, the Industrial Revolution comes out. Or, you know, what is this stuff that the speed of light is constant, independent on the reference frame? That's odd. You know, because the time depends on the reference frame. Come on, that's a stupid thing. And then after a while, you take this seriously, and then you discover A equal to mc squared and the atomic bomb. Boom, that's physics, you know, unbelievable, amazing. So I say, why don't we take this idea seriously and see what's coming out? In some sense, it is possible that this is a new ontology. Why not? To be like the atom, right? Now everybody believes in atoms like real stuff. This is made of atoms. We know everything is made of atoms, but we have never seen atoms in our life. And Boltzmann, say, at the times in which Boltzmann was using atoms to make statistical mechanics, Mach didn't believe. It's like, you know, believing Bayesian nowadays, the same. and now the atom is such a powerful model. We can derive a lot of physics. What about to think that the ontology is the computer? The universe is the big matrix in the movie, right? So first thing we need to understand, the thing that looks so different from quantum mechanics, special relativity, how special relativity comes from quantum mechanics, because we have just the quantum computer. In the background of my research, I always thought that quantum mechanics, that's all. This was my first assumption. So why relativity? And you know, you remember this poor Bohr always going after Einstein. Einstein was always right. Nobody discussed relativity. Relativity was perfect. This quantum mechanics was horrible. You know, I would take my own revenge if I could come back and say to Einstein, you know, God does not play dice. I would say, give me a break. Explain me why I cannot go faster than light. First, this is odd. Why? So this is what I want to understand. Why you cannot go faster than light? Are quantum theory and special relativity related? Actually, if I ask you, is it possible that relativity comes from quantum mechanics? I'm sure that nobody would say yes, obvious. This is, I ask many people, nobody, oh, what are you saying? That's a crazy thing. Quantum field theory is really something more than quantum mechanics? And I always thought that H-bar has nothing to do with quantum mechanics. I'm sorry. You would say that I'm crazy. Yes, but I worked without H-bar for 8 years, and I was happy, you know. And the quantization rules, come on. I hate them. I want to see where they come from. So, possible answer. Everything is a huge quantum computer. Let's see. Let's start from the easiest thing. How relativity emerges from the computation. I'm sure that many of you are not aware of the fact that you don't need Einstein principle of relativity to get Lorentz transformation. Just the Galileo principle is sufficient. I was not aware about that. This is well known since 50 years or more. But it's not common knowledge. I discovered this not very recently, like 1 year ago, on a paper published on American Journal of Physics, very interesting paper. So the Galileo principle, namely that the physical laws are independent of the reference system, clearly includes homogeneity and isotropy of space and homogeneity of time, right? Because you can translate in space your reference system, or you can translate in time your reference system. And on the assumption, on the sole assumption of isotropy and homogeneity of space and homogeneity of time, along with symmetry between reference, two reference systems, the most general transformation between reference system is the Lorentz transformation with a parameter omega, which has a the dimension of the velocity, and which is independent on the relative speed between the two references. This is a derivation that you can find actually on books. And empirically, you see that this parameter omega is C, and is also a bound for velocity, because actually, in the Lorentz transformation is a discrimination between two domains of velocity. No? You can have tachyons and subluminal particles. But you see, to derive the Lorentz transformation, you don't need anything more than the Galileo principle and a bound for velocity for some reason. Now, how? Okay.
Relativity is the limit of omega goes to infinity.
A classical, the non-relativistic limit is when you take omega going to, the Galileo is omega going to infinity. Okay. It's a special case. Sure. Thank you very much.
And what's the source for that? You said it's discovered 50
years ago. I'm going to tell you.
Okay. Yeah, it's so now, special.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Do you assume linearity of transformations, or do you derive that?
I think there is no. You know, I should come back to the proof, which is pretty long. But I think there is no need of assuming linearity also. And this is a long story, because even homogeneity of space and time is not really necessary. Depends. I'm saying it's a long story, but. Anyway, you don't need the principle of relativity of Einstein, the second one. Now, let's see. We have a computer, huge computer.
Which is uniform and isotropic, right? Take the continuum limit. Think the computer for a while, like, you know, when you see from very far apart, it becomes a tapestry, like a space-time, because you have time also on the computer. And then take only gates, which connects a finite number of systems. This will immediately give you a bound on speed. So you have homogeneity and isotropy and the bound of speed. And the bound of speed here is clearly seen. So you think this is a big computer, so these are unitary transformations. Or if you want, this is a causal network. These are events, and these are systems. Now, you cannot go backward, right? So if you go from this event to this event to this event, you move in this way. The fastest you can go is this one, is this way. Because if you consider this path, this is not causal. Because you see, in order to go from here to here, you have to come back. So causality gives a limitation on speed. That's all. Now, we have just shown that we can get special relativity from the network. Now, let's see in detail the mechanism. If the question is related to the mechanism, how it comes out, I will explain now. No, absolutely.
There are just this is the philosophy part. There is no reference frame now, for the moment. Let me go on, and then we can discuss that. So let's take
a quantum circuit like this. And so, you know, these are events. These are systems. This is the same language I'm using as Lucianardi. Lucianardi says systems are what? Are the IKEA lines when you build up a piece of furniture. So these are events. These are causal relations between events. You cannot have paths going backward, no loops. Now, you have some topology, which is the fact that two events can be causally connected in an immediate way. This will be causal immediateness, if you want. And you can take many of them and build up a full line of causally connected events. This will play the role of time. And you can have a different kind of, you know, proximity of events that are causally independent. These two are causally independent, but they are near because they are connected to another system through an event only. Or, since we want also to see the case of these two, they are connected to another system through only two events. So we have a kind of topology. But we don't have any metric, because we can, you know, make these wires as long as you want, and the causal relation is the same. So what matters here is just the network of causal relation between events. There is no metric. You can, stretch the circuit at will. Now, you take a set of events that are not causally connected. These are a slice, so-called slice. I'm using the language of directed acyclic graphs. And if you take a slice which crosses the whole circuit, this is a global slice. We call it global slice. You can make a whole foliation of global slices. And you see, so we have topology, but not metric. And what we can do, we can just count events. So we have event counting. These are the things that we have. There is no metric. We can count events. Now, relativity from quantum theory just to see the mechanism, because the proof was given before. So just build a uniform foliation, so a foliation which is repeated along the whole circuit, right? And then what you do? You are the observer. You think this is, since the systems are independent in your view, this is space. Then what you take? You take all these global slices as straight in your mind, just straight. So by stretching the wires, you will get this new circuit. Yeah, looks very different. It's the same. I'm just stretching the wires. That's all. And then I will give you more detail to see that this is exactly the same as this one. From the causal point of view, it's the same. Now, let's see, what is light? Light will be this set of events. What is a clock? Because we want to measure time. So we take a tic-tac, a clock tic-tac, which is light moving from one mirror to another mirror. So this is the tic-tac, right? Now, this will be the representation in the usual Minkowski space. And this is what comes out if you join those events in the new reference system. You see, it's the same stuff that you get. I'm not a good computer graphics, right? Because I didn't, I was not able to make all this looking the same. But you understand that it's the same stuff. And by the way, now we can count events. But before, if you don't believe me, what I did to do this stupid graphic, because you know I'm not very, very clever in these things, I put a label on each brick here, and then I copy on this on the other side and I stretch the wires. Now I did a very, it cost me 2 days because I'm stupid, right? But now you see, I'm saying, oh, come back here. You see, what is the Lorentz contraction? Here you have 1, 2, 3, and actually, yes, 3 events, and here only 2, 1 and 2. This is one line of space. You have more lines of space in between. And actually, you can draw all of them. They will coincide in part with this. And in time, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And here, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Mm-hmm. So we have time dilation. Why not? And here, I'm putting, this is the representation in which, this is the directed graph, a cyclic graph representation in which the gate is represented in this way. And you see, if I perform a Lorentz transformation on this network, I get this new network. And this is exactly what you see. The tic-tac, you see, is not symmetric because the reference is moving.
Follow these pictures, but when you make a Lorentz transformation, are you actually changing the graph from one graph to another graph? Are you just representing
the boxes? No, the graph is the same. I'm just stretching the wires.
The causal relations are.
Yes, the causal relations are untouched.
So how can the distance between two elements change?
Because when I'm measured stretching with, in a
when measured in graph theoretic units.
You want to analyze the drawing yourself. I will print it and give it to you because it took me 2 days.
Yeah.
So if you want to see the drawing carefully, you can do it, but not now.
It's the same graph, exactly.
It's the same graph, yes. This is exactly the, this graph looks different from this, but it's the same. Right. I know, a student of mine asked me, oh, then I get the other. Here, you can see. You want to check it now, it takes 10 minutes.
Okay, I think you'll do it.
Okay.
We are considering just lattice cubic, cubic lattice.
Yes.
We don't know local link.
No, just the local gates. Anyway, this is only an illustration of the mechanism because the theorem was given before.
Now, so we got special relativity from quantum mechanics. Actually, we got special relativity only from causality. So the only feature which matters in quantum mechanics is causality to get relativity. Indeed, relativity is just causality, full stop. Now, so we can change. We can consider a more general causal theory, like, for example, the operational theory that yesterday were, and last week were discussed here, also by Giulio and Paolo. I'm not going to review these things because we don't have much time. I just remember the definition of causality because this is going to play a role. Because since relativity is just a consequence of causality, let's see what is causality. We have two tests inside a network. The marginal probability of an event in an output test connected to an input one, without loops, obviously, is depends in general on the choice of the input test. The marginal probability of the input event is independent on the choice of the second test. This is the definition of causality. And actually, there are this nice theorem that the theory is causal if and only if the deterministic effect is unique and is causal if and only if the normalization of states is just a multiplication by a scalar. So this is now. Just let's see a little bit of philosophy, and this will be an answer also to Liz Molin's question. In this causal network, there is nothing more than events and causal relations. That's right. So let me say, so I don't want to discuss philosophy now. We can discuss philosophy at dinner, but, you know, because it's a never-ending story. And Chris is not here anymore. Anyway, so this is going to involve it. Let's say this is what I call Wittgensteinism. The first line of his Tractatus, when I saw it, I was so impressed because it's exactly what I thought for a long time, that word is the totality of facts, not of things. Facts are the events. So let me give now my brief history of time. And that's why there is no preferred reference system, as Liz Molin was saying. So at the beginning, there were only events. You have to imagine there is no space. Space is coming out as is emergent from events. Events are not inside the space. Then the man devised causal connection between events. Causal connections are in your mind. And then he modeled this causal collection, these causal connections as space-time. I try to give you some imagination because I want to play this kind of games. You know, we are also here for having fun, not just for learning. So imagine there is no space, the darkness. If you have a total darkness, there is nothing inside. You cannot have even the slightest idea. Maybe you are against the wall. Where is the space? Now you start seeing events. And then these events, you immediately connect them in some causal way, right? But you have to be really straight. You are not human. You are a robot. And you get input from your sensors that are infrared detectors, whatever, radars. And then from these inputs, you make a model of these inputs, and you understand you are moving inside a room, and you are going to crash against a wall. Right. So that's the idea, that you are connecting all these events in a way which is space and time. So events, but this is not just philosophy, that there are just here events and causal connections, and that's all. There is no metric. You can count events. So what matters is the number of events. But now, I know that nobody believes philosophy. Let's go to physics, which is easier. But without philosophy, you cannot do physics. I can tell you, especially in this case. What would be this quantum computational field theory? In field theory, you have an operator, psi, which is actually an operator which is a function of position. In our case, the position will be a discrete set. And this will be evolved by a big, huge gate, in principle, toward psi at time t. So this is what quantum field theory should do. The true quantum field theory is a second quantization field theory, in which psi is not a function, it's not the wave function, it's an operator. Now, in order to have a homogeneity, you need a translational invariant Hamiltonian. And in order to have local causality, I'm saying that you want small gates involving only a finite number of systems, you need nearest neighbor. P is the number of neighbor interacting translational invariant Hamiltonian. Now, what you need to do is what I call trotterize the Hamiltonian, use the trotter formula. So this will be the interaction between the first P, the second interaction between the second up to the P plus one, and so on. You divide the Hamiltonian into a set of non-commuting Hamiltonian that are exactly P Hamiltonians, each one containing a set of commuting Hamiltonians. So this will be the first, the second, the last one. And then this one will be the second Hamiltonian, the third Hamiltonian, and so on. Now, the trotter formula, this is just the case of two nearest neighbor Hamiltonian. I should have written here the product of P. And so there will be a product of P here, sorry. The limit of this product to the power n, each one with the coupling divided, or the time divided by n, will give the exponential of the sum. This is the Trottel formula. I think that everybody knows this formula. It's very important. Now, so this will give exactly, say that this big unitary can be represented in this way, as a quantum circuit. That's the idea of the local causality. You see here there are just systems interacting. There is no space. What is space? There is systems, quantum systems interacting. You see there is no space, really. Now, we have a bound, which was found by Suzuki. I said, oh, beautiful bound. It's horrible. It doesn't work. You know, this can be infinite, and this is no larger than two, because there are two unitary operators, unfortunately. And you can evaluate the bound, taking into account the fact that all these Hamiltonians commute, the one in this. So you can take the norm as the sum of the norms. So it's just the number of terms, which is 2n plus 1, because I'm going from minus ns to plus ns. And this n will be the number of layers, of double or p layers. Pn is the total number of layers. Now, let's see a specific simulation. A will be the infinitesimal space granularity, the distance between two gates. We want to introduce.
When you talk about Hamiltonian, that suggests continuous time, but is what
Hamiltonian is just the logarithm of the unitary. It's the logarithm of the unitary, and there is time at the exponent,
yes,
h bar.
It's really just e to the minus I.
It's just infinitesimal time. It's just a semi group. It's a group of transformation, is the logarithm of the unitary group. That's all. It's defined by the unitary, the Hamiltonian. There is no energy, nothing.
But the time is discrete.
No, the time up to now is continuous.
So
I will
prove what I'm asking. You're keeping time continuous, but that doesn't seem to.
I will give you at the end that the time must be discrete, but it's a long story. It's not. It's here. I can use any time, and then I can take the Trotter formula with any time I want.
Yes.
And the time.
So you have an infinite density of boxes in the time.
Yes. Sure. Okay. You don't expect that I use a finite number of blocks. Huh? But if you use an X?
No, go on. I mean, I would have, yes. I thought that was what the picture meant.
Anyway, so the field is a function of X. This is an operator. I will make a discretization of the field, and I need to take care of the dimensions, right? Now, these are generally non-local operators, be careful that even in the bosonic case, in general, even though phi n commutes with phi n plus 1 or with the other n, doesn't mean that phi n is a boson there. It would be a long string of bosons, and the commutation relation will be there. But in general, you have also anti-commutation relation, which is much worse. It looks worse, it's the same. So you have the fermion case, for example, in the Dirac. This will be just the easiest fermion case, which you have only one component, not even antiparticles, but just one, not even a spinor, just one component. So it will be like the fermionic
Klein-Gordon equation. And this one would be the easiest case that we take, which corresponds to the so-called Newton-Wigner commutation, because you know that the commutation at equal time are usually pretty difficult. Right? But this would be, for example, good for the Klein-Gordon equation again, with zero mass, by the way. So the time evolution is given. Yeah, there is an answer to your question. Time, I take the time I want. And I write this in terms of the number of cycles, or if you want, in terms of the phase, the total phase. It is convenient to take the Hamiltonian adimensional in this way. And the Hamiltonian goes into the infinitesimal evolution in this way, by the Schrödinger field, the Schrödinger picture commutator. Okay? So this is just quantum mechanics. As you see, there is no field theory, just quantum mechanics. Yeah. Now, let's consider the easiest case, which corresponds to one-dimensional field, which in which the Hamiltonian is just the momentum, and this will be the discrete version of the Hamiltonian. As you can see, is a two nearest neighbor interaction, and so we can compute the commutator, and we find this difference, and this is just the derivative in the limit multiplied by A. I put the equal everywhere, like in non-standard analysis, infinitesimal, and everything is taken into account. Now, if you take omega multiplied by A equal to C, the speed of light, I remember A is the distance between the gate, then you take the derivative twice, because the quantum evolution is the first derivative. The Klein-Gordon is the second derivative. I use the same derivative twice, and then I get the Klein-Gordon equation. Okay? So that's easy. And this is true for both Bose and Fermi fields, using this famous quantum field theory identity that all students know, right? Works both for commutators and anti-commutators.
Claiming this is equivalent to the Klein-Gordon equation, it seems to have only right movers, whereas the Klein-Gordon equation would allow both left movers and right movers.
No, I think so. I don't understand. I take just the second derivative with respect to time, using the first derivative, and then it comes out the Klein-Gordon equation.
Right. So every solution of this is a solution of the Klein-Gordon equation.
Right.
But what about the converse? You're not getting all the solutions of the Klein-Gordon equation.
Oh, yes, you are right. I have to separate two different, right. I can have the different sign here. Right. Yeah, but I can do both and then put together in the same equation. So I will have two layers. Right, thank you. Good point.
Yes, sure. Every time I square something, I have two. Remember that I am introducing more solutions. That's true. Okay, now let's make the trotterization. We already did it, right? What is interesting is that now, if we use the Suzuki bound, we find out that in order to have a convergence, to be sure there is convergence, these can go to zero only if nx is fixed and go to infinite. Otherwise, it doesn't go to zero. So this means that we have to keep A fixed. But this is not good, because if we take A fixed, since the time is going to zero, we get infinite speed. So we get the classical non-relativistic limit. So this is wrong. This is what we should not do. What we need to do is to take the ratio between space and time the same at every scale. So the ratio between A and tau is the speed of light. And so we need to have, in order to keep the ratio the same, we need to have an x equal to n. So we unfortunately need to give up the Suzuki bound, because this will explode. This exponential will go to infinity. So forget the Suzuki bound. We need to make our own bound. But we know it works. It's only. Now, when you have infinite, when you have the speed of light, means that at each gate, you have a swap, right? Swap, 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 swap. I'm going to the speed of light. So if I evaluate what is the phase corresponding to the swap for the two system gate, I get pi. So I take the whole phase, I divide by pi, and I find that the time must be this three. So it must be a multiple, double, because there are two layers. In this case, we have two neighbors, so we have factorization with two layers. It must be double of double of A divided by C. This is what I call Cronon, in honor of my friend Yuan, who used this name for the first time and has a plate on his car, which is, you see, Cronon, the discreteness of time. Anyway, now, let's see. We have seen a little bit of second quantization. Let's see first quantization, because historically, we forget that there is a difference between second and first quantization. Actually, we cannot even imagine that there is a first quantization version of quantum circuit. That's something odd, really, I discovered in this case. And there is a long discussion about Bohm that if somebody wants to do, we can do later. So what is a first quantization field theory? The field is not an operator anymore. It's just a C number function, which evolves in time. It's the so-called wave function, right? Question, how we can simulate a first quantized theory? It's just a C function, you know? We need just a classical computer, right? So in fact, we can do it. It will be just the Runge-Kutta integration. But if we use a quantum computer to simulate a classical, a first quantization field theory, what we need to do? We need to use inf bits, because at each place we want to know a function which is a continuous and is complex. And it must be a string of diagonal states, classical states, that are discriminable, right? So we actually need to take a grid in the complex plane and take it very, very, very tiny. This is what would be to simulate a first quantization field theory by a quantum computer. It's a squandering of resources. Let's see how. The general processing in the classical case is just a Markov chain. So you have a conditional probability, which gives the whole evolution. And in the deterministic evolution, which is our case, it will be a delta function. So it's just a functional dependence of the field from the input field. That's all. This is everything. And now you see this delta function gives just that the channel over rho of phi is just the rho of the functional of phi. That's all. This is the classical computation, right? And what is the quantum evolution? It's a very special choice of this function. Is it the Runge-Kutta that the students done? Is what? Is the unitary kernel. Now, it's a squander of resources. We want to do something more efficient, so we need to invent a new kind of quantum field theory. This is only for the sake of, I don't need this thing, but it's only to understand that when we work with quantum circuits, we are really working all the time with second quantized field theory, not with first quantized field theory. This is something that I didn't know, and I want you to understand. So what is second quantized circuit or computational field theory? It's just the usual quantum computation with gates and systems, tensor product between systems and gates that connects different systems. Now, it's a squander of Hilbert space for many reasons, because when you simulate a classical theory, you say this is a quantum field theory. First quantization is a classical field theory. So it linearly combines the eigenvalues of the projectors without making superpositions of the cats, nor making entanglements between different systems. So it works only with eigenvalues. It's a huge squandering of the Hilbert space. So we want to make the simulation more efficient. What we do? We write all the eigenvalues on a column. This will be the wave function, that's all. And then the interaction between n quantum systems will become just a block matrix, n by n block matrix, inside a unitary matrix. So we work only with one system. And you have exactly this. You move from the tensor product to the direct sum very, very shortly. This is, and the time evolution is just a multiplication now. You don't have u t and u dag at t. It's just a multiplication. Finish. So this is the case, for example, if we want to simulate the Dirac particle, not field theory. Let me call particle when it's first quantization. This will be the Dirac equation. By the way, this procedure is exactly this very close to the one that Nakamura did to derive the path integral using non-standard analysis. The right framework here is to consider all this infinitesimal and all this infinite as in non-standard analysis. This would be the right perfect framework, logically also, not just for the calculation. And so this Hamiltonian, it takes a little bit of time to see that corresponds to this Hamiltonian, in which you see there are only sigma matrices, which corresponds to coupling the spinor. And there will be also these terms here, where there is, I'm sorry, because it's too small, is A divided by lambda. So the granularity in space is divided by reduced Compton wavelength. The reduced Compton wavelength is just a wavelength, is the uncertainty below which, if you try to measure below this uncertainty, you create an antiparticle. And so you can see this will be the diagram of this matrix. The field is made of two spinors, the particle and antiparticle one. This will be the whole interaction described by this matrix. And you immediately see that these terms become relevant when the distance between the gates is of the same order of the Compton wavelength. That's very interesting, really interesting, because you understand that if you think the reality is made by a big computer, then you will see it in some way the computer if you go below the Compton wavelength. So this will be, by the way, the two bricks in the circuit, the two gates, and each wire will be particle and antiparticle spinors. And let me say that now we understand something interesting. You know the phenomenon of Zitterberg-Bewegung that I completely forgot, and Paolo reminded me. This is very, very important. In the solution of the Dirac particle, you have that every solution can be written in terms of an oscillation at the speed of light of amplitude, which is the Compton wavelength. And the path is just an average in this oscillation. And this is true for every solution. What we see now is that Zitterberg-Bewegung is a general feature, which is true not only for the Dirac particle, but for every particle must be true. And what is the mass? The mass will be related to the oscillation frequency of this path. So speed of light, no oscillation. If you go slower than light with some oscillation, if you stay still, a huge oscillation. So the larger is the mass, there will be a nonlinear dependence. Then the faster will be the oscillation. And now, let's see, now we can understand something more. What is H bar? What is H bar? Using this relation for the Compton wavelength, so M is the Zittenberg-Begum frequency it's related to. C is the maximal causal speed, right? H bar will be the scale in terms of the maximal causal speed and of the Zittenberg-Begum frequency above which you can use your differential equation instead of using the computer. You can make this approximation. So reality is the computer, the approximation of differential equation. And it's interesting that you can understand this is what I want to see. This I didn't have the time to do this because it's a very fresh work, so I will do it maybe next week. The quantization rule must emerge, must be an emergent feature, because there is only quantum mechanics. And what is P? P is a swappiness. So it's the tendency of the qubit to swap. Well, if I swap, if I'm more swapping, I have more P, a larger P, right? And the position is a kind of, you know, here the position, the qubit is up, all other qubits are down, just as an intuition. So what about the Schrodinger field, which I can get as the limit for C going to infinite of the Dirac one? I will get a tridiagonal matrix because of the second derivative here. The most important thing to say, just very shortly, is that the frequency will go as A to the minus 2, but since A is given by n to the minus 1, is proportional to n to the minus 1, the Hamiltonian will scale as n square, but we know that it must be extensive, we scale as n, and so we have a contradiction, means that this contradicts causality. In fact, the Schrodinger equation is not Lorentz invariant. There was a mistake in the previous paper. Forget it, download the next version. Now, Dirac field theory, the real field theory, not the particle, second quantization. You know, the first problem, oh, I'm sorry, there is a mistake here. This is, oh God, this is n. There is no 4 and no alpha. It's psi n is equal to gamma n. So this is the mistake of the last moment. So you know what is the Clifford algebra. You take a long string of sigma z, and then you take only the last one, which is plus or minus, and this will make an anti-commuting field. Right? So you can get an anti-commuting field in by using the Clifford algebra. So we have seen that in the case of zero mass, we have this correspondence between the Hamiltonian density and the gate unitary transformation, the gate unitary transformation. The gate Hamiltonian, actually, sorry, the gate Hamiltonian. Now, the problem here is that if we consider the real Dirac, the true Dirac field, we have four components. And we need anti-commutations between different components, too. And then we need to go to this 4n plus alpha. This is a way, actually, I don't know what to do. I tried. I was not able to get. I'm not saying that it's impossible, but I try in this way. It doesn't work. I consider as an interaction a long string of sigma z starting and ending with a plus and minus. But they make trouble also on the other component. So to get this matrix is pretty hard. I don't know. But what I say is that there are two possibilities. Either I prove is impossible, or I prove is possible. If I prove is possible, that's interesting, for reason that I can tell. But if it's impossible, then it's not my trouble. Every time I find a trouble in this scheme, is a trouble for quantum field theory. We know very well they have these Grassmann variables. Come on, give me a break. What are these Grassmann variables? Have you seen them? They are not operators. They are nothing. They are not representable by matrices. Can you believe I give you a circuit with Grassmann variables and I build it in the lab? Nobody would believe it. So what are these Grassmann variables? Is something more than quantum mechanics? Is something operational? Is it really operational, or is it just a trick to evaluate the path integral as a determinant, right? Let's come back to general feature. There is a very good news. Gauge invariance. This is really natural inside this framework, because in the case of first quantization, quantum circuit field theory, quantum computational field theory, you have the abelian gauge invariance, which is just the choice of the phase for each wire. So you have just the an arbitrary phase for each level. In the case of the second quantization field theory, you have an arbitrary basis for the Hilbert space, which corresponds to an arbitrary unitary transformation for each position over a slice. So it will be, you can write this over a slice. And by the way, you need now a field to program the unitary. You want to program a unitary? You know from the no-programming theorem, you need an infinite dimensional Hilbert space. Must be a boson, so that the gauge field will be a boson. And by the way, you can also see easily that it has three components in the case of a fermion. So you will get another circuit connected in some way. I'm very bad in doing drawing. I have to do this. This is wrong, because they are not going in a different direction of the space. They are just two connected circuits, one over the other. And now, that's the great thing. I love it. Is natively non-abelian gauge theory. Everything, there is no need of quantizing. You know what they do? They take the classical one and they quantize it. Here, everything is quantum from the beginning. And on foliation. So this looks very good for quantum gravity. So it looks like this scheme is really good. Now, let's have some fun and, you know, have a drink. Play God with this quantum computational field theory. Einstein demystified. So I love this Einstein with the piercing here, you see. So what is a mass? Okay. You know, a quantum circuit can simulate everything. That's the problem. Or is the power? It can simulate positive and negative masses, right? But you know, explain me why there are no negative masses. Explain me. Never seen. Say the general relativity doesn't explain. Actually, there is the cosmological constant, right? So here, this will be this upside down T work like this arrow. Actually, this is an entire column of upside down T works like a usual mass, because you have an acceleration and then a deceleration. This will be the foliation. So if you have a foliation which is going this way with it would be a mass, a positive mass. If you have a foliation going the other way, it will be a negative mass. In fact, you see there is a deceleration and then an acceleration. I'm just playing. This is not serious. I say, let's have a drink. Yeah, I want to have fun. So, you know, what about a wormhole? This would be the wormhole. So you have a very, very long event, which connects many, 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 many events. That's the wormhole. I like this. And now Einstein is very happy. We have the black hole. You see the singularity of the foliation? Everything is there, say. And events, this is only a big event, but there are no causal whites coming out. So it's made as a Christmas tree, right? And just to have another Einstein is getting, you know. We have a time tunnel. So there are two separate regions of space, huge long event, infinitely in time. And you can go from one semi-space to the other, jumping in time, but only forward. So you can come back, but then you are in the future. And you can invent everything you want. This is the strangest thing. Bob Marley, Einstein, very strange. So these are masks that are born and they die, like these patterns. You can have whatever you want. So you, but the problem is, why? So we need to put on the circuit some additional rules. These rules must be in the physics anyway. But the problem is that they must be somewhere. It's not a weakness of the power of the quantum circuit that can simulate everything. It's our problem to understand why. Okay, that's a long thing that maybe we don't have much time to discuss. This is something which I was amazed because I discovered this after, anyway. I don't know how much time I have. It's one, we started 5 minutes later. If you give me 5 minutes, I can tell you about the fact that Einstein was not operationalist. Go ahead. So the point is that Einstein was an operationalist because relativity is operationalist. Different reference systems are observers, right? The equivalence principle is the apotheosis of an operationalist. Now you just feel something, can be gravity, can be acceleration. This is the event, the only thing you see. But then Einstein actually betrayed operationalism. Not only because he was against the operationalism of Bohr all the time, but also in quantum gravity. In his gravitation theory. Because what? Because he invented an ontology, which is this space, which behaves like an elastic medium and which makes the mass attracting. This is really not operational at all. I was so surprised when I thought of this. And then I found on the web that Bridgman said exactly the same thing. Bridgman is an advocate of operationalism. I don't have this book. I'm looking forward to have this book in my hand. Einstein did not carry over into his general relativity theory the lessons and insight he himself has taught us in his special theory. And by the way, an interesting thing is that you know that Einstein died trying to solve the problem of non-emission gravity, non-emission theory, because he tried to fit in this equivalence principle also the electromagnetic field, right? But he didn't succeed. So now let's see power of QCFT versus usual QFT. So QFT has a lot of problems. There are books and books, pages and pages on all the problems of quantum field theory. That's is a plague by problems. And most of the problems comes from the continuum. The continuum is a good thing. At the beginning, it becomes a bad thing at the end, right? Because I can easily calculate derivatives. It is not discrete, but then I have to pay a price. And infinities, ultraviolet divergences, non-normalizability, and that's all. We have this Feynman integral, which is the big thing. And Feynman certainly has been the largest, the best genius in the history of physics. Everybody agrees. It works so well, you can evaluate all cross-section, whatever. These poor theoretical physicists are doing all the calculation all the time. They have fun for 1 or 2 years, then they give this to students, and they go on because it's boring, really. But the problem is that what is this Feynman integral? Do we have a good definition? The only good one that I saw is this Nakamura derivation by no standard analysis. This is really serious. And it looks exactly as a quantum computer. Then we have, you know, operational meaningless things, the Grassmann variables, come on, please. And the quantization rule, why? What is the reason of the quantization rule? I am fed up. And we have logical problems since the very beginning of the idea of field theory. Because you have two possibilities. Either action at distance, and where is causality? What does it mean? There is a cause here and an effect there. Why? And this is illogical. And action at contact is illogical also, because you cannot have. Contact is meaningless. either is the same point, then is not a contact, or two different points, then is not a contact. So it's kind of a logical contradiction. There is a huge literature about this subject. And QCFT solutions, this is the name of the new software house, solutions are clearly lattice theory coming from the computer. All problems of continuous disappear. Operationally defined, everything is defined operationally. So all operational problems must vanish. If they don't, here is a problem of this theory, not of these. And the logical problems. Actually, the Feynman-Pott integral should be solved exactly the way in which Nakamura did. And the logical problems are solved by the fact that you start from just causality. The only thing that physics cannot prove, you assume from the beginning. Causality. So I think it's a double win scenario, because if there is a problem for quantum computational field theory, there must be a problem for the usual field theory. And this problem is very interesting. If we address the problem from this point of view, it becomes a foundational problem. So it's not just a calculation. So I like this new point of view. And there is one thing which is very important. This is the thing that Lucien Hardy is interested in, I think, is that you can change the computational engine from a quantum engine to a super quantum engine, or even operational input-output, which is not causal. And the network becomes an input-output. This is probably what Lucien Hardy is looking for. But the whole theoretical framework, apart from the mathematical representation, will be different. But the framework is stably there. So the framework is working for different computational engine. I'm not going to spend more about these computational engines. So the idea is that relativity, gravity, field theory, quantization rules, and H-bar must be emergent. So we have to find all these things. And now there is a huge to-do list. So please join. There's a lot of work to do. We have to find an improved Suzuki bound. Derive Lorentz covariance field. So now we want to see the covariance transformation, the Lorentz transformation of the field through the quantum circuit, right? Then you will be convinced. Because I know that you are a disbeliever. You don't believe in a proof. You believe only in theoretical derivations, I know. Then I believe in philosophy. We need to rederive the quantization rules from the scratch, from quantum mechanics. We want to really see what's going on with microcausality. This is a forgotten problem, completely forgotten. Why anti-commutation? Because of the Pauli principle? That's not a straightforward reasoning. We can discuss that. And there are all these parastatistics completely forgotten. I want to see what's going on here, because we can do whatever we want now. We can do parastatistics, everything. This is probably the best exercise for us. PhD thesis, derive a one-dimensional toy non-abelian gauge theory, full, quantized from the beginning. This is fun. Derive a Feynman-Pott integral via trotter. There must be a systematic way of deriving the Feynman-Pott integral. Connect Lagrangian density with circuit. This is something which is almost done. The problem is to write down the field in terms of local operators. Explore connection with lattice theories. There are so many lattice theories. Which one of these lattice theories are related to a quantum computation? Rederive Einstein equation. I would be happy even with the Newton gravitation. Explore Penrose spin networks, Rege calculus, you know, all these things. Rederive gauge theory. This would be the hard part, and the very hard one. Write down a new theory of quantum gravity. This is what Lucien wants to do. Let me say that it becomes mandatory now. I just give some remarks. I'm not summarizing the talk, because it's not just the I did already too much publicity, right? I don't need to summarize all the things that are nice. But let me say that this is a first test of Lucien Hardy's approach to quantum gravity. I strongly believe that if this approach work for quantum gravity, must work for field theory. We see there are many advantages. I don't see up to now. The only advantage, disadvantage can be that it's difficult to do calculation, but field theory is difficult too. Then, this theory puts the finger, like San Tommaso, into the trouble of quantum field theory. And for me, the best motivation is that it's big fun, because I can come back to the old physics. You know, I completely forgot field theory and gravitation. Now I can study. I have something to do. And another thing, it will bring quantum information to particle physics, general relativity, and cosmology. So that's a lot of fun and, you know, opportunities for quantum information people. That's the last of parentheses. Thank you very much for your patience. Thank you. Oh, yes. Okay.
Many comments, but let me try and boil it down to two. The list of to do things that you gave, some of us have been working on for many years.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
At least the kinematical framework, the pictures of the wires and so on, as you describe them, I would call it a causal set. Instead of using the language of a quantum computer, I think it would be equally fair to say you're really asking how to do causal, to do physics on a causal set. Something.
I know.
And now you have a particular proposal, whether a quantum computational one is the right one, having a little computer or a little gate at every node, whether that's the right thing or not, I'm not sure. I think there might be other frameworks. But in a very broad sense, I think I would sort of embrace what you're doing as an example of doing causal set theory. So that was the large problem. We may have some specific disagreements. I think the connectivity structure
right. That
you're talking about will not do justice to Lorentz invariants, and that's related to Lee's comment. I think also about the distinguished reference.
I want to discuss this in length because this is an important, so the last point. Anyway, you know, if you talk to people, you cannot say causal networks, they don't know what they are. So the idea that you simulate quantum field theory by a quantum computer is more natural, it's only because of that. And also, this is quantum field theory.
Yeah.
It's not causal field theory, which is...
Yeah, well, there isn't now a quantum field theory, and I was talking with Lucy the other day.
Yeah.
There is this...
No, I know, but... There are two purposes. One purpose is to go toward Lucy and Harvey causal framework, and or non-causal, but there is also this simple thing of getting field theory. Quantum field theory is quantum, and that's a very precise, huge program by itself, is huge.
Yeah, then I had a very minor, relatively speaking, comment, but why would you need non-standard analysis if you have a genuine discreteness? It seems to me that only comes in,
no, because you
in
take
connection
the,
with the
right.
continuum.
No, because you take the limit all the time. You take the limit all the time because you are when you use the Trotter formula.
But that would just be some approximation. I mean, fundamentally, you wouldn't be using it in the definition, I presume. It's just
I think this is an old idea that Ozawa was saying all the time that I am very sympathetic with, is that there are different scales. And this corresponds to hyper-real numbers or infinite, infinitesimal, all these things correspond to different scales. It's very physical. And from the logical point of view, the proof of non-standard analysis are very neat. And also there is the point that there is this work by Nakamura, which seems strongly connected. It's indeed, the title of the work is Non-Standard Derivation of the Feynman-Pathe Integral, which is a precise derivation for the Dirac case, and he used non-standard analysis. It is, say, you want to imagine this infinitesimal as something, which is not zero.
But is he not working in the continuum when he does this?
Oh, non-standard analysis, it is done for working with the continuum.
Yeah.
It's so-called a non-standard.
Is your point of view that ultimately there's a discrete, you introduced discrete time and introduced...
We will have like a very, 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 very long numbers, you know, huge. the discrete time is here. This is time. Hyper real time. Why not? I don't know, maybe it's not, it depends if it's usable, if it's practical, I don't know.
Second question.
Yeah, for the first point on your to-do list, I think there might be something which already exists.
This is very interesting.
I think a small modification on the Lee-Robinson bound should probably do with what you want. Lee-Robinson bound. So
Robinson?
Lee-Robinson, yeah. So L.
Robinson is the same as standard analysis?
I don't know. Lee-Lieb, yeah, L-I-E-B. And then
the famous one of the Lieb Robinson.
Yeah.
That's great.
But that's for gap systems.
No, it's what it's used to prove certain things in gap system, but it's for anything on lattice.
Lieb Robinson bound is a velocity propagation bound, but that's for gap systems.
I don't know what you mean by gap system. No, it's used to prove certain properties of gap system, but it can be used for any system, right. Anything that's on a lattice, any finite system, basically.
Yeah. So first comment is there's more to Isabel's comment than meets the eye. So you should have a comment. The work with he and his collaborators about using the Lee-Robinson bound to derive maximal speeds of propagation in systems like you're studying, I think, is very relevant. So let me encourage you to look into that. A comment following Raphael's comment, and then a comment and a question. So I think a precise name for the kind of system you're studying is a quantum causal history.
Quantum causal history.
So again,
history.
Yeah, there is some literature about taking a causal set, putting a little quantum computer and quantum gate in each thing.
These are the inputs that I need.
I can Google quantum causal history.
For TV Mark, a little bit of collaborators develop them. We can give you references.
Yes.
And there is a few results in a few technology, but certainly the motivation for this work was very similar to yours. It was unclear to me what the answer to Raphael's question was. So let me ask it again precisely. Are you imagining a scheme where there are in a finite volume a finite number of these gates or processes, or are you imagining to go to real physics, you take the limit and there's an infinite number?
If I just address the problem, the practical problem of deriving field theory from a quantum circuit, yes, I take the limit. If I want to explain you why from causality only, without any pre-assumption, that's another issue. Which one you want? You were saying there is an established reference frame. This is not true.
I'm just asking. It matters a lot to understand the research program that you're embarking on. If you're trying to replicate conventional quantum field theory on a fixed Minkowski space-time, you have a system with a finite number of degrees of freedom per volume, a finite dimensional Hilbert space per volume, and you have to take the limit of your lattice space
sure.
into zero. Okay. But is that the research program you're interested in, or what Raphael was trying to push is many people have the view that even though that is the construction of quantum field theory,
yes.
Okay, that in nature there is a discreteness or a finiteness, so there actually are only finite dimensional Hilbert spaces associated with finite volume. And it matters a lot for many of these to-do lists, which thing you're trying to do. You're trying to reproduce quantum field theory and really take the limit as the lattice space and go to zero,
approximation. Okay. First of all, I don't think I get quantum field theory. That's my conjecture. I think it's different. So what I think is that it will be different, and maybe if we're lucky, we can even find something which is experimentally testable. Because the gauge theory which comes out, I'm not sure, is the same. The quantum gauge, non-abelian, I think is different. And if something is different, what I want to address, I want not to focus on the calculation. I want to see the foundational issue. What is really going on there, which is not quantum? What is in addition to quantum? That apart from change, you know, I can change the field by changing the gate. I can have, you know, different kind of circuits. For example, I can increase the number of dimensions. Why three dimensions? This may come from a theorem on foliation, whatever. But if I don't get quantum field theory for some reason, I'm not sure if field theory is right and this is wrong. Maybe it's the opposite. Because here, I don't need any assumption, just quantum mechanics. In field theory, there's an assumption every page. So I want to understand all the assumption of field theory using this nosy, this very nosy approach.
But wait a minute, you also have a lot of assumptions. For example, you have the assumption that your circuit, your quantum circuit, is wired up like a lattice and has regularity.
This is
if your quantum circuit is based on a random graph, you would have no correspondence to anything working in a manifold or in a finite dimensional system.
In a random graph that cannot be embedded in three or four or five or six, I don't know.
You can't.
The problem is that you have a topology in the graph. There is a theorem.
You can embed a graph in three dimensions, but you can't embed a random graph in three dimensions.
Right.
Such that the graph metric has any relation to the metric of the right space.
So if you have a random graph, you need to go to many space dimensions. Topologically,
roughly as many as the number of nodes.
Right.
Right. So what I'm saying is that I'm not criticizing at all. I'm saying you have also something. If you, in the pictures that you drew, you are making assumptions.
I think that the assumption is just a simplicity assumption. Like, for example, if I just give many events, part that we cannot see the space, we imagine the space. Space is our imagination. We see few events, and we interpolate in a continuous, and we extrapolate to infinity. So space is our imagination. First, clear, it's not a real thing. Otherwise, we don't agree. Now, if space is like that,
but I don't think it's in our imagination. No.
It's not. I'm saying what we see is not the old space, right? That's a very important point. Anyway. If you just collect events and you put them in an easy way, it is automatically homogeneous and isotropic. The fact that you have three dimensions, that's a big question. This can be motivated by some foliation theory that I don't know. But maybe there are more dimensions, this I don't know. You can also have a dimension that are curved here, like on string theory. You know, string theory, you have dimensions that are going this way. What is the point? So these are the problems. But I don't want to explain everything. I want to understand why in the other theory. And if there is something which is not right, I want to understand what's going on, if there is something more. So, for example, why these Grassmann variables? Do we need them, really? Or why we need to increase the number of dimensions and have many dimensions that are curved? Why? And all these things here have a very clear position. So I can look at the fundamental problem by using just quantum mechanics and few things. I don't need to go to many different assumptions, just few things. What is more than quantum mechanics? Is there something more, which is not just changing the gate? This is my big question. And up to now, if I ask you what is more than quantum mechanics, please, if you can give me an answer. What is there which is more than quantum mechanics? And the choice of the gate, clearly.
I don't know.
The topology of space. The topology of the network.
Topology of the dimension,
yes.
And if you're doing ordinary quantum field theory, the metric of the space that the field theory is defined on. The metric comes into the Hilbert space norm and the Hamiltonian.
But these are things that are not in any theory. So we don't have an answer to this problem, so we want to understand other things, because this is a very difficult problem, probably. Why three dimensions?
Right.
Is there any question?
Okay. Not really a question, just a comment. The way that you got Lorentz transformations from your labs reminded me of a paper and I think the author's name was Christian Beck, but maybe Raphael or Lee. Are you familiar with this paper?
There is such a paper, I don't remember the author.
I have a sense that it's the same sort of approach.
Interesting.
So I want to look at it.
Yeah, I would love to see this paper. But if there is, this is one thing that I want to understand. I never saw anywhere a place where they say, you know, quantum theory can imply relativity, which is a trivial thing, but it's, to me it's very important.
This article is not about quantum mechanics. It's about trying to, you know, see length contraction and time dilation in something like a cellular automata. So that cellular automata doesn't have to be a set of quantum gates.
It's a different thing. The cellular automata is a different thing. And
your little argument with the, you know, twisted things had nothing to do with the fact that those boxes represented quantum gates.
Exactly.
So I don't see why it would be at all important that they were quantum.
Why
people don't say this thing? Everybody should know that we don't need relativity.
But
why?
So hang on, Mario. So I didn't follow your argument. But
I spent my life to understand this thing like that, and nobody told me. And everybody said, "Oh, I don't know." You know why?
Hang on. you're claiming that you need quantum to get relativity.
No, any causal network. But even if you read the papers, I read some papers about causal networks. They say, this is resembled the Lorentz transformation, and this was very inspiring. But then there was no conclusion. Yeah, because the foliation is the same of Tomonaga-Schwinger. Actually, this is the same Tomonaga-Schwinger approach. This was the big inspiration to me. But, let's see if it works.
But would you agree with what Rob just said, that it's not quantum that implies relativity, it's having some sort of causal network?
I know, this is
causal connection that's giving you.
Yeah, I am the first one who says that. I would say, I understand, but we want to simulate quantum field theory, so. It must be the quantum causal networks. I agree with you.
There's maybe a difference in attitude between the sort of work that you're talking about, and I've been working on a similar thing, and the sort of thing that Raphael works on and Frattini's worked on. But it may not be a substantial difference. So the attitude we've been taking is to take an operational approach. So these boxes represent some sort of laboratory described activity, whereas you think of the causal net as a sort of fundamental thing, some sort of fundamental ontology corresponding to this point related in a causal way. And I think Frattini had a similar attitude, but the mathematics is probably very similar. I wonder if you are really taking an ontological attitude, an operational attitude, or whether you're actually in the end taking an ontological
operational, what does it mean? Operational is what you really do or what you potentially can do. So the unity transformation is operational or not, because you don't see any event, it's not operational. It's a potential event. So it's operational. What is field theory? It's a potential set of events. These are possible events. So you can. If you don't put the observer inside the network, the observer can stay out of the network and connect his own tests to the network, opening some wires and connecting. If you put the observer in the network, there are no events, because the events need an observer to be seen, right? So this is the same problem that you have in quantum mechanics. We don't need to discuss about this for years again. So that you always have this problem. This is part of any operational approach. Either the observer is out of the theory or it's not operational. So you have potential events, which are the unity transformation. These are possible events.
But then what is it beside the language? I mean, why can't we all do just the same thing and one of us says, these I'm talking about potential events, and the other one says, I'm talking about really existing.
Yeah, but
One thing that might be different is that at least in the operational attitude, you have knobs on these boxes, things you set externally, and they correspond to some piece of mathematics.
But in Marrow's, does he have these knobs?
Yeah, but think to quantum mechanics. It's not my stuff. It's quantum mechanics. What is quantum mechanics? Is a causal theory or not? Is it operational causal theory or is it ontology? Quantum mechanics is an ontology? It's not.
And people take different attitudes.
So this is not an
ontology.
The
quantum computer is not an ontology. There are not things, only facts. Possible, in principle, happening facts that didn't happen, they may happen. That's, I think, the most general approach, operational approach. Because otherwise, you cannot, you know, consider quantum gravity as a huge set of experimentalists wherever in the galaxy making experiments everywhere, right? But the theory must work without the experimenter there, because it's the causal connections that the experimenter consider when they do an experiment with things that are very far apart, they have a causal set of connections that they cannot see, but they believe, which is the theory, the field theory, is a belief. And the causal connection are beliefs, not real. This is a very strong philosophical approach. Unfortunately, it's not Chris Fuchs here. He would be an advocate of this position. And then you update the beliefs when you do an experiment and so on. This is an update belief in a network. This is the approach. Which is exactly your approach. If you think about it, you cannot have everywhere a knob. You can put a knob if you want. But there is no knob in the center of the galaxy, right?
It seems to me what you're saying is really a critique of operation rules.
No, it's not a critique.
I would personally endorse.
I have a strong operation. No, it's not a critique. It's just to make operational approach a little bit more flexible. There is not an operator everywhere to have an operational approach. We have an operator somewhere, but the operator can go home and have a drink or come back to the lab, you know? Yeah.
Okay, so the Harvard thank the Mauro once again. And if some of you are interested in a couple of minutes.
Thank you.